Last Friday, we celebrated the gift of $5 million that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is giving to support the United Methodist Church through the United Nations Foundation to help us in our global health initiative. That $5 million is a little like planting seeds. We're going to use that money to grow millions and millions of dollars for the Global Health Initiative. That partnership that we now have with the United Nations Foundations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is a historic partnership. None of us on this stage can think of any other relationship that the United Methodist Church has ever had with outside partners that brings this magnitude of partnership, depth and breadth of partnership with the United Methodist Church. And our goal here is to do good. It is to do good to improve the health of children and families. Sitting on the stage here are bishops of conferences who either already have received insecticide-treated bed nets to prevent malaria or who will be receiving insecticide-treated bed nets to prevent malaria in the near future. That's a sign, a beginning sign, of what's already going on in that partnership. All that's been made possible and will continue to grow as the months grow by. So this afternoon, it's my privilege to introduce to you another of these great moments in this general conference, to introduce to you Mr. Bill Gates Sr. Mr. Bill Gates Sr. guides the vision and strategic direction of the foundation that was begun by his son, Mr. Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft. He is a model for all of us as one of those who could be sitting back and enjoying retirement, and I learned his 8 grandchildren. Instead, he's out here working hard to try to make the world a better place to live. Prior to joining the foundation, Mr. Gates practiced law for nearly 50 years in Seattle, Washington. He serves on the Board of Regents for the University of Washington. He is the author of a noted book on estate taxes, and he has been a volunteer for more than 24 organizations in the northwest part of the United States. A core belief of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is that every life has equal value. Would you say that with me? Every life has equal values. It sounds to me like maybe they've been influenced by our founder, John Wesley, and some of the good United Methodist folk of Seattle. Mr. Gates brings to us another powerful reason for a future with hopes. Would you join me in giving a warm, warm welcome to Mr. Bill Gates Sr.?
Thank you, thank you, thank you. You're very kind, you're very kind. And I just want to tell you what it really is a thrill for me and for the foundation that this moment that we're commencing to celebrate and get started down the road on. It's a completely marvelous program to be involved in. And I do thank you very much. So, There are 1,000 delegates here today. You share your devotion to God. You share your devotion to the United Methodist Church. But you differ in some important ways. For example, those of you who come from North America have probably never seen malaria. But many of you who come from Africa see malaria every day. On Sundays, when you offer prayers for the sick, you envision children shivering with this disease that turns a mosquito bite into a death sentence. That stark difference among you is a tragedy. The world has wiped malaria out on one continent and allowed it to keep claiming lives on another. But here today, you're deciding to turn that tragedy into a triumph. You've come together, 1,000 delegates here in Fort Worth, representing 12 million United Methodists around the world, to say that you'll just no longer accept malaria. To say that you are all brothers and brothers and sisters don't sit back and watch each other die, not when there's a way to stop it. I'm here to thank you on behalf of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We're very proud to be your partner in this wonderful campaign to end the world's worst killer of children. We believe this campaign could not succeed without you. So, I'm asking each one of you to make a personal commitment to help your church end malaria. This disease is thousands of years old, and human beings have struggled against it for just that long. But at this very moment, the goal of wiping malaria off the face of the earth is more realistic than ever before. Now, we have the science and technology to save more lives, and now, we have the will to do it. You are proof of that. Almost 300 years ago, your founder, John Wesley, explained the moral implications of what is now fashionably called globalization. He said, "I look on all the world as my parish." Let's together say, "I look on all the world as my parish." That's great. In that single sentence, he described the bonds of mutual responsibility that hold us all together. Nowadays, some people write long books trying to express the same simple idea, but for good reason. That idea is the key ingredient for a peaceful world in which all people are treated as equally precious. When enough of us arrive at the conclusion that parish lines and national borders cannot wipe away our common humanity, then we will do what is necessary to end needless suffering. Then the human impulse that told us it is wrong for people in North America to die of malaria will tell us that it is wrong for people anywhere to die of malaria. This fight against malaria is going to take billions of dollars. Some of that money will pay for tools that already exist, like bed nets and insecticides that protect people from disease-carrying mosquitoes, and antimalarial drugs that treat people who do get sick. Some of the money will find the research and development of new and better tools, like a vaccine. So when you make your donation, you will be saving lives. The fight against malaria is going to take more health clinics in more countries. That's where people get the education and the medicines they need. Your church has been operating health care clinics in Africa for more than 150 years. So as you grow those efforts, you will be saving lives. The fight against malaria is going to take politicians who make it a priority, because when governments get involved, things really start to happen. 3 years ago, President Bush committed the U.S. government to the fight when he announced the President's Malaria Initiative. And here's an example of what that initiative has already done. In Zanzibar, the number of infants with malaria has gone down 95% in just 2 years. So, when you raise your voice and tell your political leaders that malaria is no longer acceptable, you will be saving lives. More than anything, the fight against malaria is going to take a firm commitment to John Wesley's idea, because that idea is the source of the world's will to end malaria. You are 12 million people armed with the conviction that all the world is your parish, which makes you the most powerful weapon there is against disease. The truth is, I am newer at this worldview than you are. I've spent the last decade being converted. Since my son and his wife started their foundation, I learn every day just how small the world is. I can trace my own learning about malaria to a trip I took last year to Zambia. On the way over, I read through a long list of data suggesting that that country's health crisis was all-encompassing. Malnutrition, poverty, rampant disease. One particularly discouraging problem is that there are only 540 doctors to serve a population of 12 million. Imagine if Section A and Section B made up the entire medical corps responsible for care for the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, and San Antonio. That's a problem. But Zambia has launched a very ambitious national campaign against malaria. Its goal is to cut malaria by 80% by 2015. And every person I talked to in Zambia displayed a seriousness of purpose that persuaded me they will indeed achieve that goal. I was particularly impressed by one young man who explained the extraordinarily complicated logistics that go into delivering bed nets to rural communities. These are the hardest to reach places in a hard to reach country, but they're doing it. The nets start out in Dar es Salaam or Durban. From there, they go by truck to a network of depots throughout Zambia. From there, they go by 23,000 bicycles to families who live far away from roads. That's 23,000 bicycles covering a landmass that's about the size of Italy and Sweden. Last year, health workers in Zambia distributed 3 million bed nets. And in just 2 years, the percentage of Zambians with a bed net has gone from just 20 to almost 80. Other African countries are embarking on equally ambitious programs, and the money you raise is going to help them succeed. I see so many signs of hope, so many reasons to be optimistic. Through the Nothing But Nets campaign, millions of people are sending a net to save a life in countries they've never heard of. Maybe your net was delivered by one of those bicycles in Zambia. And just to step aside from my text for one quick moment, let me say that it's come to my attention that there is a basketball of some value which is which has become an item of some interest at this convention. And I am so intrigued and inspired by that that I'm here to say to you that when the bidding is done, we at the Gates Foundation will meet that highest bid. I'm very surprised at that reaction. I was told that the highest bid so far is a couple hundred dollars. Thank you. I'm delighted to make that announcement. So let me go on. French airline passengers now pay a small tax that buys anti-malarial drugs for Africa. One of the organizations that benefits is the Church's Health Association of Zambia. The United Methodist Church is a long-standing member of that association, which provides health care for millions of Zambians. At a research facility in Mozambique, the government of Spain is helping to fund advanced clinical trials of a malaria vaccine candidate called RTSS. The results have been promising so far, and it would be reasonable to say we've never been so close to a malaria vaccine. And do you notice a pattern emerging here? France and Spain, Mozambique and Zambia. John Wesley's idea is gaining traction. So as you raise money to build up your own healthcare infrastructure in Africa and to support the Global Fund for AIDS, you're demonstrating how powerful partnership is in this fight. Just a decade ago, the Global Fund did not even exist, and in short time, it has become the most important source of malaria funding in the world. As more and more people join this fight, you hear some of them making the case that global health is an economic issue or a national security issue. And that's fine with me. If we have to make that argument to get the public funds we need to fight disease, we surely should do it. But to me, disease is not an economic issue or a national security issue. It's a humanitarian issue. People are dying, and we can save them. That ought to be enough. People suffering from malaria are human beings. They're not national security assets. They're not markets for our exports. They're not allies in the war against terrorism. They are human beings who have infinite worth in their own right without any reference to us. They have mothers who love them and children who need them and friends who cherish them, and we ought to help them. So you believe that too, and that's why you've chosen to lead this campaign. And you are leaders among leaders. I know you will take this message back home and share it with friends in your congregation, and I know that your friends will share it with their friends too. That's how the United Methodist Church will lead this campaign. Let me close by giving you a very small but warm example of what your leadership looks like. This is the story of a friend of mine back home in Seattle, a woman named Candy Marshall. This is a story she told me. She works at the foundation in our global health program and has a part in this malaria activity. She grew up on a farm in Nebraska, and she attended the United Methodist Church every week. When she was a girl, the church kept a birthday bank. And every year, the children deposited one penny for every year of their lives. Well, a few weeks ago, her mother, who was aware of Candy's work, sent her a note. Turns out Candy's church still keeps that birthday bank. This year, its gross receipts were $62. Candy's mom inspired that congregation about this cause. So the Williamsburg United Methodist Church in Nebraska sent $62 to Africa this year. Candy's mother sent a little extra, and the minister, knowing about Candy's work, has invited her to speak at that church next time she's home. That's what your leadership looks like. It starts with one penny. The pennies add up, and they can buy nets or drugs or fund research or refurbish hospitals. The real power of your United Church is that it teaches children in Nebraska and the children in Zambia that they belong to the same parish. That, in a single sentence, is your gift, and it will end malaria. Thank you.